Hello, and welcome to Outdoors in Scotland. I'm John Burns, and this is my podcast for people who like the outdoors in Scotland and, to be quite honest, pretty well anywhere else, really. I recently did a podcast about some really classic bike rides in the Highlands in Scotland. And it got me thinking a bit about cycling because I'm thinking really they're great rides to do, but the people who do long distance cycling are actually probably only a tiny proportion of the people who actually cycle. And obviously cycling is an outdoor pursuit that, well, I guess millions of people take part in. So on the show today, I've invited Peter Silburn, and he's from the Norwich Cycling Campaign, which is I'll let him tell you what it is, really. That's probably a better idea, isn't it? But we wanted to talk about, really, I thought it'd be interesting to talk to him about everyday cycling and about the barriers that might be to that and how we sort of overcome them. Hello, Peter, how are you?
Hello, John. Yes, nice to talk to you.
Yeah, great. Thanks very much for coming on the show. Well, what is the Norwich Cycling Campaign? What's it about?
Well, we're a small volunteer group, and we're campaigning for better cycle infrastructure in and around Norwich, really, so that more people can cycle. As you say, we're not about sports cycling. Nothing wrong with sports cycling, but that's not our area of interest. It's about everyday cycling, what you might call utility cycling, which is just people getting about by bike, basically, whether that's to work or school or going to the shops or just going out for a bike ride. The one thing we do know about this is that people will only do that if it feels safe. That means you need cycle infrastructure. So that's protected cycle lanes on busy roads and so on, because at the moment in this country, we don't have a lot of cycle infrastructure. So cycling is still a bit of a minority activity, but we're really missing out there, because if we had better cycling infrastructure, more people would cycle. And the benefits coming from that are really huge right across the board. I mean, better health, obviously, you're getting exercise, reduced air pollution. Air pollution is a big problem in our cities. Noise pollution, you know, the list goes on, all the benefits. Traffic congestion. Every city in the UK suffers from traffic congestion to some extent. Well, that's basically too many cars. So every time someone's on a bike, it's one less car. So motorists benefit from more people cycling. Not to mention, perhaps the key thing is the deaths and injuries. In 2023, three people on bikes were killed in Norwich. Obviously, they're all killed by car drivers. It's usually at junctions, busy junctions. So we need better cycle infrastructure and better protection for cyclists. That's really what we're about. We're campaigning for better, more and better cycle infrastructure so more people can cycle.
Yeah, I was only thinking, I mean, if we could get even, say, of people's commutes to work, if we got 10% of people who are currently do sort of driving to work out of their cars and onto a bike, that would make a massive impact, wouldn't it?
It would indeed, yes. I mean, if you think about it, just taking traffic congestion on busy roads, it doesn't take much of a reduction in the traffic, as you quite rightly point out, for that to free up the traffic. So yes, you're absolutely right. Thinking about an arterial road into the city centre where it's jammed up with cars and there aren't many people cycling because you have to cycle with the cars. You put in a cycle lane down there, you don't have to get that many people cycling to free up the traffic. So yeah, it's benefits society all around.
So you're obviously talking to, is it the local authority that you mostly talk to then? The council who are,
yes.
It's them who are responsible for the road structure.
Yes.
Right.
Yes, to the uninitiated, it is all a bit confusing, you know, the different levels of local authorities. But yeah, essentially, I mean, we currently have a, you know, two-tier system. It's all going to change, obviously, with the local government reorganisation. But we currently have this system where the county council, which is a higher level authority, is the highway authority. So it's them who are responsible for building cycle infrastructure. The district council, in our case it's the city council, is the planning authority, so that has quite a lot of impact on cycling, particularly with bigger developments, big housing developments, where you can put requirements for developers to build cycle lanes and cycle paths and so on. But it's mainly the county council that we deal with. They're the highway authority.
How do you feel that sort of councils in general, I mean, we could talk about that specifically, but I mean, obviously, it is right across the board, really. It's sort of council responsibility. What do you think the response or the attitude towards cycling is in general?
Well, in short, I think it's underwhelming. That's
Right.
me. I'm being polite. I've worked in campaigns in other places, in Surrey, Sussex, Kent, and so on, and other places. It's a universal problem across
Yes.
the UK. Norfolk County Council is not in any way special. Yes, I mean, I'd have to be quite blunt and say I don't think local authorities take cycling seriously. It is regarded as a bit of an afterthought. Roads for car drivers just happen. You don't have to campaign for a road. I drive a car. I don't have to campaign for roads. They just get built. Cycle lanes are kind of discretionary. They're kind of nice to have. So that's why we have campaigns, because basically we have to kind of push councils to do things like building cycle lanes. Obviously, money is an important factor. There's billions spent on our road network. The amount of money spent on cycle infrastructure is just a drop in the ocean. That's the key thing. If you look at countries like the Netherlands, which is always the example of the gold standard, as it were, the amount of money they spend on building cycle infrastructure is vast compared to us. You have to spend the money to build proper high quality cycle infrastructure, and we're just not doing that in this country. It's kind of piecemeal, a little bit here and there. I mean, anyone who's cycled in this country will be very familiar with the situation. You get a few hundred yards of, oh, a nice cycle path, and then suddenly it ends, and so it goes on. We don't have a network of high quality cycle paths, and that's what we need to get people cycling.
I think the point of a network is really important. My experience as a cyclist, sometimes I cycle a lot, sometimes I don't. I'm a sort of a, I don't know, it sort of appeals to me sometimes and it doesn't. I don't know why. But what I've found is I live in Inverness, and like you say, there are areas that are good, but there are also areas that are really bad. And if you're trying to get somewhere, you need a network. And how close is Norwich to having a network then, would you say?
Well, when people ask me, how good is Norwich for cycling, I say, well, it's not bad for a UK city, but that's not
Right.
saying very much. We do have a cycle network of sorts here, which is something. There is the council produces a map. There's enough of a cycle network for it to not be a complete joke. There
Right.
is, and we've got these colour-coded cycle routes. They are just what we talked about. There's bits of them that are quite good, and then there's bits of them that aren't. And this takes work over many, many years. So there has been quite a bit of investment in cycle infrastructure in Norwich. As I say, we do have a kind of a sort of a network, but it definitely needs improving.
Yeah, I was looking on your website, and there are obviously particular areas that you're concerned about. And one of them, I think, was rather graphically entitled "The Bridge of," is it the Bridge of Doom? Is that right?
Yes, that's one example. Yes. Yes.
What's particularly bad about that then?
Well, that's a road bridge
Right.
on the A47, which is a major dual carriageway, and that crosses the River Yare to the east of the city. Now, that was built 20, 30 years ago or so, and a particular quirk of it, it's incredibly high. It goes up in the air because still this requirement by the Norfolk Broads Authority that tall ships can get into the centre of Norwich, so that's why the bridge is
All
high.
right, I did.
I don't think they've ever done that for decades, but anyway, so there's this bridge. Now, it's a typical viaduct, dual carriageway, and there isn't a cycle path, a proper cycle path along the side of it. Rather perversely, there is a narrow part. It's about 1.5 meters wide that runs along one side of it that is actually open to the public. It's this bizarre situation. You do get people, quite a lot of people, cycling there because it takes you out to the east of the city. The key point about it is there really isn't any alternative for miles around. I mean, the next bridge crossing of the River Yare is about 20 miles away to the east or something. It's what's known as the desire line. It's where people want to go. So despite the fact that it's absolutely horrendous because you're cycling mere feet from 70 mile an hour lorries and things, people will use it because it gets to where they want to go. So this is a good example where there's a poor provision of cycling infrastructure. So cycling is suppressed. What there needs to be is a proper walking and cycling bridge, which obviously is going to be expensive. It needs to be a separate bridge next to it, which should have been built at the time when the
Right.
bridge was built. Going back to the Netherlands, if this was in the Netherlands, of course they would have put a walking and cycling bridge next to it. We don't here. So we have to sort of come back decades later and think about retrofitting something.
And so presumably, if you come back to do something like that, the actual cost is much higher. Is that right?
Of course, yes. I mean, this is the rather annoying thing when major road schemes go in. Again, just another example, there was a northern bypass that was only built or less than 10 years ago, you know, obviously multi-million pound project. And they put in some little bits of cycle lane, but they don't connect up. Had they wanted to do that properly, it would have been a very, very small increase to the cost of the scheme. Just if you're spending billions, putting in a cycle bridge that costs, you know, 2 or 3 million is peanuts if you do it at the same time. Whereas when you come back 10 years later and say, oh, we need 2 or 3 million pounds to build a cycle bridge, everyone throws their arms up. But so, yes, they should have done it at the time that they built the road bridge.
Are there any other particular areas that you're focusing on your campaign at the moment then?
Well, where do you start? Yes.
All right. Bad question.
Yes. I mean, we're kind of going through a phase at the moment where there are lots of poor schemes. I mean, I could just pick anyone. Yes, it's kind of a lack of ambition that we find frustrating.
Right.
Without going into too much detail, I mean, Norwich did get a kind of a fund of money to do quite a lot of schemes to do with sustainable transport and cycling as part of it in 2018, and they're sort of spending their way through it. So we've had quite a bit of money spent on cycling schemes. Our criticism has been that they've just not been very good. I mean, I could pick just one. There's a roundabout kind of on the Ring Road, Heartsease roundabout. They upgraded the roundabout recently. It costs, I think, £4 million.
Right.
Which is quite a lot of money. Now, when they bid for that, it could potentially have been a really high quality roundabout for both motorists and cyclists. There's a particular design called a Dutch style roundabout,
right. Okay.
which it sounds, you know, kind of, oh, that sounds really kind of niche. It's basically what the Dutch call a roundabout, where you have basically you have a cycle lane around the outside.
Right.
And without going to the detail of the design, but obviously they've had decades to sort of finesse this particular design, which is very safe. It slows down the traffic and separates out the different stages of going through the junction,
okay.
And also works well for motorists. To cut a long, long story short, we didn't get that in the end. Norfolk County Council initially said, oh, we can't do that because it'll slow down car traffic. And then they said there isn't space for it. Now, we argued, well, you could have done that. So we got to come halfway house, which is an improvement, but they really could have done it properly. It is interesting, actually, because this is a kind of quite a complex junction. So it's where people live in the shops, but it's also on the ring road. So it's kind of mixed use. So it's a kind of difficult junction. So what they've done, they've slowed down traffic. I think one of the things I find quite interesting, but actually that's increased the capacity. It's kind of slightly counterintuitive because the way that most sort of traffic engineers tend to think, oh, we need to speed up the traffic. So we widen the road, you know,
okay.
we clear everything out of the way. But actually, by slowing down the traffic, you fit in more cars. If you think about it, get a car, you know, it's like with the motorways and the 50 mile an hour things on the motorways, is by slowing down the traffic, cars can be closer together. So you fit more cars in. It's like this design, which is better for people walking and cycling, that they've done, is actually better for car drivers as well. That's just an example where it was really just a lack of imagination, I think. From the traffic engineers, they know how to build roads for cars. They don't really know how to build cycle infrastructure. So when you present something that to them is quite radical, they just don't know what to do with it, and they sort of fall back on what they know. So this is a problem. Actually, it's a bit of a kind of chicken and egg situation.
Yeah.
Unless you start building cycle infrastructure of a good quality, you don't have the engineers trained in building it. So it's a little bit of a problem we have. And there's several other schemes of a similar nature.
Okay.
It's kind of due to a lack of imagination, we've got kind of poor schemes. Now, you know, why does that matter? Well, it's well known that to get more people cycling, you really need high quality, continuous cycle routes.
Yeah.
So if you put in something half-assed, people look at it and say, oh, look, you know, you've got a cycle lane there. Why aren't people using it? Well, if it's not continuous, if it's not high quality, if it still doesn't feel very safe for people, then they won't use it. That then kind of reinforces the idea that, oh, well, it's a waste of money building cycle infrastructure. In some ways, it can be worse to spend money building something, you know, poor quality rather than nothing at all.
Yeah, I can imagine that. I mean, one little example here, actually. There's a road on the sort of the southern side of the shores of Loch Ness, which is pretty quiet road, but it's a very fast road. I used to cycle there a lot. But what the council did was they actually put a little tiny cycle track in, which actually made a massive difference. So you could be off the main road and on a side road, which is much safer and much more pleasant to cycle, you know. But the downside of it is that they also installed a cycle lane to take you into this little village of Dawes. That isn't very good quality, so it's really bumpy. So people don't use it, you know. But it's still a lovely little ride. I think things are changing. The climate crisis is now hitting us on the nose, without a doubt. And one of the sort of answers is fewer car drivers, fewer people pumping out fumes. We're going to have to change. The need for change, to me, seems has never been so urgent, really. And do you think that maybe over the next 10, 20 years, the drive or the importance to change things will influence the provision of sort of opportunities to cycle in the city? Do you think that's going to make an impact?
Well, I mean, you're absolutely right. There have been some positive signs in recent years. We've had, I mean, again, without getting too technical, we've had changes in government policy. Back in 2018, there was something called the Cycling and Walking Investment Strategy, CWID, which for the first time stated that there is a requirement for government to spend money on cycling. The design standards for cycle infrastructure were upgraded in 2020, and they are now actually very good. The trouble is, local authorities aren't necessarily following them. So there are some good signs. And yes, compared to even 10 years ago, in some areas there has been some good cycle infrastructure gone in. Funny enough, in London has probably been one of the best examples. Now, London's a big city, so if you there's been some it's only in small areas, but nevertheless, we now do have some really good examples of world-class cycle infrastructure in the country, little bits, but we just need so much more. And the bottom line is, if you look at the modal share of cycling, the percentage of people who cycle compared to other modes of transport, it's still very low. It's for most cities, it's around 2 or 3% of people cycle. Now, that's kind of what they call dead cat bounce. It couldn't really get much lower than that. That's quite small. A typical Dutch city, it'll be 30, 40%. A very good Dutch city might be 50, 60%. We ought to be aiming certainly for like 10% or something. The hard facts are still not many people cycle in this country. And car use is going up. During the pandemic, cycling shot up, but then it came back down again. Whereas car usage went down as well, but has gone back up, and I think is now slightly higher than it was before the pandemic, which is surprising. It comes back to you build for the sort of traffic you want. We're still building roads. I mean, in Norfolk, around Norwich, there are several major road upgrade schemes currently going on where we're widening roads, building new roads. Now that generates more traffic. There's this concept of induced demand. So if you build roads, you get more traffic. And the M25, I think, is a classic example of that. When they first built it, it was like two lanes of traffic, and then it quickly got busy. Oh, well, we need to build another lane and then another lane. That induces demand. If you make it easy to drive, you get more people driving. And the same will apply to cycling. If you build a good cycle network, people will cycle. And the converse of induced demand is what's called traffic evaporation, which is if you make it more difficult to drive, fewer people will drive. They'll just take alternatives. The two things we need to be doing. Bear in mind, it is government policy to reduce the amount of private car use for all the reasons I think you talked about in the beginning with reducing carbon emissions and so on. And it is actually Norfolk County Council policy to reduce private car use. But in practice, they're not doing that. They really need to bite the bullet. When you say you want to reduce public car use, you must mean it. That means fewer cars on the road, which benefits all of us. But you won't get that by building more roads. You need to actually make it more difficult to drive, but you need to provide the alternatives as well, whether that's cycling, walking, buses, trams, trains, and so on. Again, coming back to the Netherlands and plenty of other places on the continent that have good public transport and good cycle networks, so people don't need to drive. Unfortunately, the term car dependency, people drive because that's the only choice, you know. So you can't blame them if that's the only way to get about. There aren't alternatives, so we need to be providing alternatives and also making it more difficult to drive.
I think that's a really important point. And I think in years to come, I could be wrong. I sort of think that we will almost be pushed. We will be forced into making better choices in terms of our transport networks. And I think the work that you're doing at the moment is pushing that agenda forward, and that can't be a bad thing. Presumably, you obviously, you'd like people to join you and to support your campaigns. I can put a link to your website on the podcast page. So if folk have listened to you and want to see, it doesn't even have to be in Norwich, I guess. If they want to see what you're doing, they can, if, even for their own city or for their own network, then they can come along and take a look at your website and get an idea of just how or what you can do. And I'm sure you'd be able to help people as well. Is that fair, Peter? Is that okay?
Yes, I very much appreciate that. Yes, I mean most cities of any size will have an equivalent campaign group, generally, the term name of city cycling campaign. They tend to be called, and most of them are volunteer groups. So please do get involved. There's only a couple, I think, the London one and the Cambridge one, where they're professional organizations, which are a different kettle of fish. But yeah, we're just a voluntary group. So if you are interested, please get in touch. And yes, in whichever city you happen to be in, yes, do get involved.
Okay, Peter, thank you very much for talking to
Well,
me.
thank
It's
you.
great to
Yes.
hear from you, and I wish you every success in your campaign.
Well, thank you very much. It was good to talk to you.